But because of this hierarchy, everybody is equally vital in their position and role. They're not equal, but they're equal. They're equal because every one of them has an important position. That's how they're equal. They're equal within hierarchy. The director of Bellbury offers no leadership. He wants no responsibility. But because of that, there is constant infighting between its members. It's like a bad English faculty, let's say, where there's all this infighting and there's no leader to really stop this. But at St. Anne's, they are controlled by Ransom, who has returned from Paralandra, and Ransom is in the guise of a true biblical patriarch. And again, Lewis believed in patriarchy. In our modern day, we tend to see that as a dirty word. But patriarchy means the rule of the father. It goes back to the patriarchs like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Lewis believed that patriarchy can be good because in a good patriarch, everybody knows their place and their worth. Again, Lewis is a traditionalist, going back to an older model. Let us move on. Jane, and we'll turn over to her now, during the course of the novel, she discovers that she possesses special visionary powers given her by Mal Eldil to help combat the growing evil of Bellbury. And when St. Anne's learns this, they invite Jane to join them, their society, and also to join forces with them to fight Bellbury. But Jane learns that to join St. Anne's, she must learn to give of herself in two ways. One, by submitting to the proper authority of God, Ransom, and her husband, and by accepting her role as creatures. As a creature, excuse me, something created. Now, again, a lot of modernists attack Lewis for his view, his sort of traditional view of the family and his traditional view of hierarchy. But I would argue that Lewis is not a woman hater or a misogynist. Rather, he is feminine affirming. He wants to affirm the role. Let's put it this way. A lot of modern Christians believe the Bible is egalitarian. Men and women are the same. Lewis believed in an older model that they are complementary. Men and women are different, but equally vital and worthy in God's eyes. That, I believe, is what Lewis is doing. He is feminine affirming rather than woman bashing. And she must learn that she's got to take her place in a hierarchy. All right. Finally, in the walled garden of St. Anne's, Jane finally yields herself to God the lover, and by so doing is enabled to become both a free, unique individual and a full, real person. And that wonderful conversion in the garden should remind you of Augustine's conversion in the Confessions, but it's also modeled after Lewis's own conversion. Let's go back now to Mark, because you see, Mark's initiation rite at Bellbury is quite different. To prepare Mark to reject Christ and accept the head, he's actually have to step on the cross, and to accept the head, Mark is thrown into a lopsided room whose function is to disrupt all normal standards and thus pervert Mark's natural human reactions. Throw him in a room where nothing makes sense. Look at the contrast. St. Anne invites Jane into a world of love, beauty, and purpose. Bellbury, on the other hand, seduces Mark to embrace a nihilistic, surreal, atonal world free of all absolutes, the world you get when you throw out the towel. And guess what? Here, as in all of Lewis, the decision whether or not to embrace Christianity is not merely a theological one. It is actually a choice between reality and illusion. Between the natural and the unnatural, the straight and the crooked, the light and the dark. This is a real dualistic novel in terms of good and evil. Now, in human terms, the strength of Bellbury is immense. How do you beat Bellbury? Well, St. Anne's has Ransom. But he's a different Ransom than in the first two novels. Gone is the physical, martial Ransom of Paralandra and Out of the Silent Planet. The man we meet who runs St. Anne's is a sedate figure who rules by spiritual strength of character. In fact, we learn that Ransom, he's not a warrior anymore. He is actually in intermittent pain from a wound in his heel that he received in his struggle with Weston in Perelandra, with the unman. Now, this image is packed. Most of you know in Genesis 3, the first prophecy of Christ says that the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent will fight. The seed of the serpent will pierce the heel or bite the heel of the seed of the woman, but her seed will crush his head. And it's most Christians consider it a prophecy of Christ because Satan bit him in the heel when he was crucified, but then Jesus crushed his head in the resurrection.